Title of the message tonight is Abner Sheds Blood. Abner Sheds Blood. Last week, we were introduced to Abner, and he had basically declared war on David. He had decided that he would be a kingmaker. He was the general that was in charge of Saul's army. And so probably the only son that Saul had left after he and some of his boys were killed on Mount Gilboa was a 40-year-old named Ish-bosheth. The name meant shame. And so I don't have any idea what this young man did to live up to that name. But evidently, he was the only one left to choose from of the bloodline of Saul. And so Abner decides that he's going to install him as a figurehead for the king of Israel in that position. Abner knows the promise of God. He knows that David has been chosen. And so I want Abner to preach to us for a few weeks. We'll not finish Abner's story tonight. We're only really in Act 2. As he installed Ish-bosheth, now he's making a move. And we'll see that as we pick up in verse number 12. And I want us to begin there tonight. I want us to see that Abner went out. You notice that he's listed first, and he went out from Mahanaim, and he went to a place called Gibeon. Now, if you look at that verse and you see the action that he takes, the first thing that we understand is that he is now the aggressor. Not only is he's not content to just have Ish-bosheth as the king of Israel and the majority of the tribes, but now he's making a move on Judah. And so he's the aggressor. Well, evidently David, who has always got the ear of God, he looks at his general. His name is Joab. Now, Joab is a nephew of David. As a matter of fact, we won't turn to it, but I'll give you the reference. There are three men that are mentioned in verse 18. You have Joab, you have Abishai, and then you have a young man that we're going to talk a little bit about tonight, and his name is Asahel. And these three men are brothers. They are the sons of David's sister. We see her name in verse 18. Her name is Zeruiah. And we know from 1 Chronicles that they are her boys. So they're David's nephews. They have followed David. Joab probably is the oldest, and so he is the one that is the leader of the house of David. And so if you look at verse 13, it says, "And Joab, the son of Zeruiah, the servants of David, had they went out." In other words, he was not going to be content to just let Abner go unopposed. "And they met together by the pool of Gibeon." And it says that when they were there at Gibeon, they sat down. In other words, evidently, you have Joab and you have Abner. You have both generals from the competing houses. And you've got one on one side of the pool and the other on the other side of the pool. Now, when you think of a pool, I don't want you to think of something the size of an Olympic pool or a small South Georgia pond. It was basically a place that was probably not any larger in the body of water than maybe this one middle section right here. But you had these competing armies that were on each side of the pool. And so Abner, he proposes a plan. We pick up on this plan in verse number 14. And Abner said to Joab, remember, Abner is the aggressor. Let the young men now arise and play before us. Now, when you think of somebody that is playing before you, I think about my grandson or my granddaughter playing baseball or softball. You've got a competing team that's on another team, and when one is in the field, the other team's batting, and then it flips at the half inning. That's what I think about with playing. But the play that we're looking at here has nothing to do with fun and games. What they're doing is they're deciding on the lives of young men. And one of the things that has always bothered me about war, you don't find a lot of 50 and 60 year old commanders warring. They want to send 18 and 19 year olds out to do it. That's always bugged me. You know, even the terrorists do that. They promise them all kind of things, you know, well, hey, if you'll do this, you'll have so many virgins in paradise. The only problem is none of the old guys want to make the move. And so you've got these two men, you've got Abner and you've got Joab, and they're basically playing a blood sport game with these young men that are in their armies. And so Joab said, let them arise. Now, just because Joab is on David's side, let me just interject this here. Joab is not a good man. You need to keep that in mind. Because as we go through 2 Samuel, you're going to see Joab on a couple of three different occasions, you're going to see him as he disobeys direct orders from David. And one of the reasons that he does that is because of the story of David and Bathsheba. You remember when he gave Joab the note and said, this is the orders. And so Uriah took that note to Joab, and Joab looked at it and he said, I don't need to destroy this. I'm going to keep this for a future reference. And the next thing you know, old Joab is disobeying orders. He disobeys the order about Absalom. David loved that boy. And he said, don't hurt the young man. But Joab was having none of that. And Joab kills Absalom against the orders of David. But he's got that note. So what's David to do? That's his family. What's he to do? And so Joab is not a good man. And here he's being challenged. Well, he don't want to lose face. And so he said, let him arise. And whenever we get to verse 15, we see how that the game, quote unquote, is being played. There arose and went over by number 12 of Benjamin. This is of the house of Saul. And it says, which pertaineth to Ishbosheth, the son of Saul. And then there were 12 of the servants of David. Now there's no doubt that when these young men were in this battle, that they were doing their best to try to win for their side. When you look at these men, they're probably seasoned warriors. You would not take some raw recruit that barely been out of boot camp. You're going to put somebody that knows how to kill. These are killing machines. And David's men have been really good at it. He had 600. And these men, they won battle after battle after battle. And so they were seasoned. Verse 16 tells us what takes place. And they caught every one his fellow by the head. Evidently, they all had long hair. And they fell. Well, let's back up. They caught everyone by the head and thrust his sword in his fellow's side. In other words, each one of them that had one hand on the hair, they had a knife in the other, and they stabbed each other so that they fell down together. That means that as they all fell down, 24 young men, 12 from Benjamin, 12 from David's house, 24 men lay there around or in that pool. And it says that the place was called Helkath Hazarum. And what that means is, it means that it's the place of sharp edges or the place of sword edges. In other words, because of this one event, it was given a name. Now, often people give names to places. And I'm always intrigued by that. How does this place get their name? My wife and I live in a community called Between. You either live in Loganville or Monroe if you're in the community of Between. But it's still where you live. I live in Between. And I like saying that because people look at me like, say what? Well, that's what it was called. Why is that? Why was it called that? Because it was halfway between Loganville and halfway between Monroe. It was halfway between Atlanta and halfway between Athens. And so we live in Between. And there are places throughout that have names like that. I guarantee you, if I were to ask you, why did they name this? You would say, well, it was because of this history. I had kinfolks that had property all around what is called the Ohoopee River. And I was a little boy, a long time after the bridge had already fallen down. It had washed away, I guess, with a storm. But some of the pilings were still there. And they would say, hey, we're going swimming. Where are we going to go? We're going to Gerald's Bridge. Nobody had been across that bridge in 40 years, but it was still called Gerald's Bridge. Just up the road from us, there is a road called Ho-Hum Hollow. And that's because at one time, back when it was all country, it was dark. Ho-Hum Hollow. You didn't want to be there after dark. And so you've got names. Well, this name of this place is Helkath Hazarim, and it means that it's a place of swords or a place of sharp edges. And so you've got these people that are there. Well, why did they have this contest? Well, the reason is because it was a ruse, really, because it was as though, well, if Abner's guys would have won, then he would simply have been able to say, all right, we're the victors. You come over, and you're on my team now. You're in my army. I'm your commander. Joab, in his pride, thought, I'll do the same thing. And so, why should all of these people die, these thousands and hundreds of people die? Why should they die like this? Let's just put 12 on 12. The problem was that the 12-on-12 ended in a draw. You didn't have Abner's team win or Joab's team win. What you had is you got 24 dead men that have stabbed each other to death. And so, in verse 17, everything breaks loose. It says, and there was a very sore battle. That didn't mean that somebody needed some absorbing junior to rub on them. The sore battle meant that it was intense. It meant that there were people that were under excruciating pressure. I mean, they're fighting here, they're fighting there, and I mean, there's hundreds, probably into the to the low thousands that are fighting with each other. And then it says, and Abner was beaten. So all of the army that he had brought with him, they are now basically defeated. And the men of Israel, the people that he brought with him, they're defeated before the servants of David. And there were three sons of Zeruiah that were there. You had Joab. And by the way, in verse 13 and in verse 18, this is the first mention of Joab that we find in the Bible. It won't be the last. And so you've got Joab, Abishai, and Asahel. But then it says something about Asahel. It says that he was as light of foot as a wild roe. In other words, he was fast. He was able to run like a deer or like a gazelle. When David was writing the song hailing the heroic deeds of Jonathan, he talked about that. How that he was like a gazelle. And now this same description is being given to Ahasahel. And evidently he could just run. And I've met people like this. I remember hearing Dr. Hudson tell one time about a guy that they had that when he was in high school over in Decatur. He said he was so fast that his nickname was Rabbit. He said he would go to the track meets and he would run backwards while everybody else was running forward with his stopwatch. He could run. And I've known of people like that. We used to have a fella in the church named Benny Hill. Benny was in our children's program for many, many years. He was known as Farmer Ben. He was not a big guy by any stretch of the imagination, but the guy could fly on a ball field. And he would hit a ball to the left side of the infield, beat it out to first, and head to second and try to get in a rundown because they couldn't catch him in the rundown. I mean, he was fast. We had two or three people think that they were fast, and they would say, I can outrun him. And I'm going, I don't think so. And so they'd set up a contest. And I remember two or three young guys, they just, oh, yeah, I can outrun him. And I mean, he just blew them away, and here he is. He's already in his 30s. He's just fast. Evidently, Ahasahel was like that. He could run. He was light as at a foot, he could run like a gazelle, and evidently he had endurance. We're going to see that as we move into his story tonight. Now, you've got the background. You've got the preliminary battle where they're making blood sport of the two houses. Then you've got all the battle that takes place when everything breaks loose and people are dying right and left, and all of a sudden Abner's forces have been beaten. So he begins to run. And then there's a pursuit that takes place in verse 19. So the first thing that I want you to do is I want you to see this boy named Ahasahel. He's chasing Abner, and in going, He turned not to the right hand nor to the left from following Abner. In other words, he sees Abner and he's thinking, he's the leader. I'm going after him. And so he starts that. I want you to notice, first of all, some of the lessons that we can learn from Asahel. The first thing that I want you to remember is this: he needs to learn to slow down. Just because you can run fast doesn't mean that's always the right decision. Let that sink in for a moment. He is faster than anybody out here. Abner is trying to get away, but he is chasing him because he thinks, hey, that's going to be the number one scalp and I'm going to get it. That's his attitude. Well, when he has this speed of a gazelle, and I mean he is just going, he really should have heeded what we were taught when we crossed railroad tracks. Stop, look, and listen. He should have thought about who he was chasing. He should have been slow and methodical instead of just full bore, because you can run somebody down don't mean that you need to catch them. It almost is like the old funny saying, you know, that I'm talking about the dog that chases the car. What's he going to do with it when he catches it? And that's what you have here. You've got Asahel, and he's chasing Abner. And in reality, he should have slowed down. The second thing that I want you to notice from this story tonight is that he is a rash young man. He is single-minded. He is tunnel-visioned. And ultimately, it cost him greatly. If you looked at verse number 19 again, it says, he turned not to the right hand nor to the left from following Abner. Look at verse 21. In verse 21, he said he would not turn aside from following him. Verse 23, howbeit he refused to turn aside. Three times he had the opportunity to stop, look, and listen, but he did not do it. And if you look at this, you've got to say, what lesson can I learn? There are times when we need to look and listen before we act. I've talked to four couples in the last 2 weeks, and each of these couples are having some trouble. And it's usually because they don't want to stop. They want to listen and just think about what God's got to say about the situation. It's all emotion. And when those types of things happen and you don't think your way through it, what you're doing is you're operating from a zeal without knowledge position. You and I need to realize that zeal is a good thing, but not without knowledge. I mean, you've known of people that have just gone full bore, and then all of a sudden that emotion dies down, and the commitment dies with the emotion. We've had people that have blown into this church, and I mean, it's just, I want to serve God, I want to do this, I want to do that, and 3 weeks later, you can't even find them. That's why when somebody comes into the church, we usually watch them for about 6 months before they're really offered much to do. Because you can't tell how much gas is in the tank by the toot of the horn. We need to make sure of the commitment factor. We need to make sure that it's not just a fly-by-night. I've had people say, well, what do you think about so-and-so? Well, I'm still watching. What do you think about that situation? I'm still watching. And some people say, well, you know, you just can't watch and watch and watch. I'm thinking, well, sometimes you need to watch and watch and watch. Because you want to make a decision that is going to be long-lasting, going to be permanent, or at least long-term for the glory of God. And so, he was stubborn, he was rash, and there are people that are in the church like that. Now, if you read this story, you're going to have a tendency to think, Abner's not so much of a bad guy. But don't forget, he started all of this. He's the one that took the men, his army, from Mahanaim to Gibeon. He's the one that installed Ishbosheth. He's the one that made the challenge. He's the one that knew the promise of God that the kingdom was going to belong to David, but yet he still bucked that because he was looking to be the number one behind the throne, so to speak. And so he's looking at this young man, and he said, he looks behind him in verse 20, and he goes, art thou Asahel? And he answered, I. Now, if you say, well, it says I am, if you'll notice that the am is in italics. So all I'm thinking is that, you know, the boy, he's breathing hard. He's got his heart rate up. Probably not like Abner, but yet he goes, I. And so he said to him, turn thee aside to thy right hand or to the left hand, and lay thee hold on one of the young men, and take his armor. In other words, look, boy, you need to leave me alone. You need to go find one of these young guys. If you want to fight with somebody, go fight with somebody your own age. Go fight with somebody of your own experience. I don't care if it's one of them that's dead or one of them that's alive, but don't bother me. Leave me alone. But it says that he would not turn aside. And in verse 22, it says, and Abner said again to Asahel, turn thee aside from following me. Wherefore should I smite thee to the ground? How then should I hold up my face to Joab, thy brother? In other words, how can I look at your brother if I kill you? He's not going to be thinking about me in any kind of friendship situation. He's not going to have anything that's collegial about this. He said, you need to turn aside and quit following me. And evidently, as they're having this conversation, they're getting closer and closer and closer because Asahel is fast. And so, howbeit he refused in verse 23. He refused to turn aside. Wherefore Abner, with the hinder end of the spear, smote him under the fifth rib, that the spear came out behind him and he fell down there. So you can just visualize this. I mean, have you ever, I guess, seen somebody that, I mean, it's go, 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 and then somebody stops and all of a sudden another person zooms right past them? Well, that is the picture that you've got, except you've got two men. And you've got Abner that's running, probably in a jog, and Asahel is chasing him. I have no idea what kind of weapon he's got. But the scriptures tell us what Abner had. He had a spear. And in ancient times, it was not just the pointed end of the spear that had the metal on it that was dangerous. They would take the other end of the spear and they would sharpen it so that when they were climbing, it could go into a crevice so that it would be more secure. I guess it'd be similar to a baseball player wearing cleats. And so he had this spear, and basically he's running like this, and he's probably seeing this kid behind him. And because he would not stop and quit chasing or go chase one of the young guys, when he gets close enough, Abner all of a sudden stops and stabs backward, and it goes under the fifth rib and comes out his back. And this young man's life is done. All because he was rash. All because he would not listen. He had that tunnel vision where that, hey, I'm going to get the glory from taking down the general that's been causing the trouble. And so he dies. So we've seen that he needed to slow down, he needed to stop, he needed to look, he needed to listen, and he wouldn't do it. We saw that he was stubborn, he was rash. But I want you to notice the last thing tonight is Asahel's failure caused others to be hindered. Look with me at verse 23. And I want you to notice the latter part of this verse. And it came to pass that as many as came to the place where Asahel fell down and died, what did they do? They stood still. So in other words, those that came to the place and they would see that people there and they would go, Ahasahel, oh, that's awful. That's Abishai, that's Joab's brother. That's David's nephew. And instead of pursuing, they're standing. Every time somebody in the church of God falls, there's a hindrance. Every time trouble comes, there's a hindrance. And the work of God is not fulfilled in its greatest potentiality because people are standing and they're just seeing somebody that's fallen by the wayside. And so they just stood still. I want us to do our best to be wise about what's taking place in this old world. I don't want you to ever forget this, that the devil is like a roaring lion walking about seeking whom he may devour. He wants you. He wants your kids. He wants your grandkids. He wants the kids at this church. He wants to devour. He wants to rend them and rend you from limb to limb. And if we go headlong as Asahel did, we're probably going to end up really with destruction in our lives. We're going to end up being hindered because we did not think it through before we acted. It says in verse 24 that Joab also and Abishai pursued after Abner. Their brother is dead. As they begin to pursue him, you're going to see this over and over again. It's almost as though there's a next of kin syndrome going on here. Well, you kill my family, I'm coming after you. You know, you had the old Hatfield-McCoy feud that went on for years and years and years. Why? And it all started because somebody said somebody stole a hog. And people were killed on both sides of that feud. blood for blood. Well, I want to remind you of something. Joab, he's got a long memory. And there's going to come a time when Abner's going to die as a fool. But right now, he's killed the baby brother of Joab and Abishai. And so they're chasing him. And finally, the sun goes down when they were come to the hill of Ammah that lieth before Gia by the way of the wilderness of Gibeon. They were only about 5 miles from what we know as Jerusalem. And they had to call it off because of night. But you've got Abner and his guys that just keep on walking through the night. But they'll meet again. And so Abner kills the baby brother. When he does that, pretty much his fate is sealed. And it was probably sealed by God before that. Because when you go against what God has already said is going to happen, that's a bad place to be. Don't fight against God. And that's exactly what Abner did. Everything that's transpiring right now is Abner's fault. Amen? Let's stand together. Appreciate you being here tonight. I hope that that you'll have a good week this week. I don't even think we need to have an invitation tonight. I appreciate you guys coming up and playing. If you want to play a little bit as folks shake hands, you can. But let's pray. Father, I want to thank you for the story of Abner and Abner.